ಓಮಜ್ಞಾನತಿಮಿರಂಧಸ್ಯ ಜ್ಞಾನಾಂಜನಶಲಾಕಯಾ ಚಕ್ಷುರುನ್ಮೀಲಿತಂ ಯೇನ ತಸ್ಮೈ ಶ್ರೀಗುರವೇ ನಮಃ. ಶ್ರೀಚೈತನ್ಯಮನೋಭೀಷ್ಟಂ ಸ್ಥಾಪಿತಂ ಯೇನ ಭೂತಲೇ ಸ್ವಯಂ ರೂಪ ಕದಾ ಮಹ್ಯಂ ದದಾತಿ ಸ್ವಪದಾಂತಿಕಂ ವಾಂಛಾಕಲ್ಪತರುಭ್ಯಶ್ಚ ಕೃಪಾ ಸಿಂಧುಭ್ಯ ಏವ ಚ ಪತಿತಾನಾಂ ಪಾವನೇಭ್ಯೋ ವೈಷ್ಣವೇಭ್ಯೋ ನಮೋ ನಮಃ. ನಮಾಂ ವಿಷ್ಣುಪಾದಾಯ ಕೃಷ್ಣಪೃಷ್ಠಾಯ ಭೂತಲೇ ಶ್ರೀಮತೇ ಭಕ್ತಿವೇದಾಂತ ಸ್ವಾಮಿನಿತಿ ನಾಮಿನೇ. ನಮಸ್ತೆ ಸಾರಸ್ವತೇ ದೇವೇ ಗೌರವಾಣಿ ಪ್ರಚಾರಿಣೇ ನಿರ್ವಿಶೇಷ ಶೂನ್ಯವಾದಿ ಪಾಶ್ಚಾತ್ಯ ದೇಶತಾರಿಣೇ. ಶ್ರೀಕೃಷ್ಣ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ಪ್ರಭು ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ ಶ್ರೀ ಅದ್ವೈತ ಗದಾಧಾರ ಶ್ರೀವಾಸಾದಿ ಗೌರಭಕ್ತವೃಂದ. ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ 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 ಹರೇ ಹರೇ, ಹರೇ ರಾಮ 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 ಹರೇ ಹರೇ. Sometime in the early 70s, when the devotees were working very hard, what used to happen is Prabhupada would give morning Bhagavatam class, and once he was making a point that this movement is going on, he was saying, by my intelligence. And when he looked around the room, everyone was dozing off. And he said, I am very convinced it is because of my intelligence and hard work. The reason I bring it up because before I started, I was told, Nityananda Pran Prabhu, you have the perfect slot. It's the post-lunch slot. We will come because we are feeling sleepy. And I promised them I'll make it easy for them. I didn't realize so many of you are sleepy. So we'll see. The attempt I'm making is to share a few, aspects of how Srila Prabhupada is the perfect exemplar of Sharanagati. Of course, Srila Prabhupada, as we hear, any pure devotee, definitely Srila Prabhupada, his qualities range both in spread and depth like a vast ocean. So no one can claim that I can cross an ocean. So all we can do is go up to the waist or neck into the ocean and say I saw the Pacific Ocean, correct? So today will be just sampling in that sense. But just a very, very limited, but hopefully inspiring, not because I'm speaking inspiring because it's about Prabhupada, to have an appreciation for who is our leader. His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Because we're hearing these wonderful things about Sharanagati, these beautiful prayers. Maharaj was such a beautiful class this morning. Last night's Bhagavad Gita class was fantastic as well. And so we'll see all of that philosophy in the light of the life of our founder Acharya. Because philosophy comes to life. It starts moving and walking in the form of a devotee, in the pure devotee of Krishna. So I was thinking, as I've been hearing these and preparing for this weekend, one of the things I thought was, what is the purpose of surrendering to Krishna? Generally the word surrender means to give up something, right? That's just the connotation, that you give up. One country fighting with another country and one surrenders. So what this, the connotation of surrendering to Krishna is not so much because, okay, I've been defeated by Krishna, okay, I have to give up. It's not a sense of defeat. Actually, surrendering to Krishna is an act of victory. So the purpose, at least in my mind, I'm sure there are many purposes, the two that I came up with. One, the reason we want to surrender to Krishna is because we want to carry out His will. As long as we don't surrender to Krishna, we are carrying out our own will, either side by side or exclusively. So we want to carry out Krishna's will. Why? Because that is who we are. We are servants of Krishna. These two go together. As soon as we recognize we are a servant of Krishna, then the first order of business is to carry out His will. And as long as we can't recognize we are a servant of Krishna, we have our own will. In fact, we write it. My property should go to. Not that kind of will. But my individuality, I shouldn't say individual. My exertion of my authority. That is individual will. And the second, the reason we want to surrender is because we want Krishna to participate in our lives. Without surrendering to Krishna, if you notice throughout the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna does not participate in anyone's life. He only is involved in as a very neutral at best personality or very indirect through the agency of the modes of nature. Last night I was speaking with Dravida Prabhu because his class inspired this point for me. That if you notice wherever the verses of surrender come in Bhagavad Gita, it's not so clear right away, but if you notice a little bit, Krishna's talking about how He participates. So it's all about reciprocity. Because surrender, it sort of seems, I have to give up things, I have to accept certain things I don't want, I have to become humble, I have to see Krishna as my only protector, as my only maintainer, everything I'm doing. That's how it feels if you look at it. But actually it is because Krishna is very actively then participating in our lives. Like yesterday, the verse was, Sarva dharman parityaja, mam ekam sharanam vraja. That's a tall order actually. Then Krishna says, Aham tvam sarva papebhya moksha ishyami masucha. He's saying, if you just surrender to me, I'll take care of everything else. In fact, there was one devotee, it was Grace Krishna Smaran Prabhu, I was remembering him the other day. And he said something, it was funny, he said something many years ago. He said that in a spiritual master-disciple relationship, there is a lot of ecstasy and a lot of distress. The disciple gets all the ecstasy and the spiritual master gets all the distress. But when you look at things, it seems like the disciple is in distress and the guru is in bliss. That is because the internal condition is different. Actually, the disciple is in bliss because all of his worries or her worries have been taken care of just by the act of accepting a guru. From then on, it's all bonus. So this verse, then Krishna's participate. There's another verse. Satatam kirtayanto mam yatantashva drudhavrata namasyantashya mam bhakti nitya ukta upasate. And then Krishna, another verse says, for those persons, yesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam dadami buddhi. See, he is participating. There is reciprocity. Another verse, yoga kshemam vahamyaham. I personally carry everything that they need. So this verse, 1866, before we... I'm sharing all this because as I'm speaking, I would like all of us to have Prabhupada in our mind. And everything that I'm saying, how Prabhupada exemplifies it. I'm sure each of you has some story, some anecdote about Prabhupada that brings this to life. So a little side is... before I say about Mahashrucha, this verse is so important. And as we heard last night to Yamuna Jina Prabhu's question, that for those who are beginning devotional service This is the doorway, it's the entryway, and therefore it's considered a very critical verse. From a rasa side, it's preliminary. But this verse is so important that Sri Ramanujacharya wanted to know the meaning of this verse. So he approached, I think it is Shalapurna. He approached him, and this personality was in a place called Sri Purambudur, which is Ramanujacharya's birthplace. And Ramanujacharya was in Sri Rangam, which is about, I would say, 200 miles away. At that time, there was no flight, car. You had to walk through the jungles. So Ramanujacharya walked all the 200 miles to meet this personality and ask him, "Can you explain the meaning of this verse to me?" And that person sent Ramanujacharya back. He didn't answer the question. And it's described that Ramanujacharya walked back and came back again, was not answered, went back. 17 times Ramanujacharya went seeking from him, "Can you please explain this verse?" And last night we were explained without asking. That is the depth of Krishna's words in that verse, very, very critical. And Ramanujacharya, he took any amount of adversity just to understand what that verse says. Because Krishna is saying, "Ma Shucha, don't worry." So generally I was thinking, why does a person follow dharma? If you look at, now there are many persons who don't follow dharma, but a generally person will want to follow dharma because they want to overcome their worry. Any person who takes up any dharmic activity is because they want to overcome something that's worrying them. Because they understand that there is a way of going about solving their worry in such a way that they feel uplifted from that worry, and also generally that they're happy in the world. So there are many dharmas. And Krishna says, forget all of that. The only way, the only dharma that you're supposed to follow is that you come to me. So, I don't know how many of you visited the temple of Balaji in India. If you notice the deity of Balaji, he has two arms holding the conch and the disc in these two hands. Have you noticed the other two hands? He stands with the right palm like this, and the left on his thigh. And it is described that that form is 1866 verse. Because when he's showing with his right hand, he's pointing to his feet, "Mam ekam sharanam raja." And with his left palm, with his confident stance, he's saying, "I will take care of all your difficulties or all your sinful reactions, Ma Shucha." So that's the, it says that that deity signifies this verse. That there's nothing to fear, one who comes to Krishna's lotus feet. So then our Srila Prabhupada naturally is the exemplar for all aspects of surrender. So before we jump into the six angas of Sharanagati and sharing about Srila Prabhupada, I want to read you two quotes from His Holiness Sachinandan Maharaj. First, it takes courage to surrender to Krishna. It takes a spiritual hero. If one is weak, one will place one's hopes in other shelters. So as I said, surrendering to Krishna is an act of victory. One is a hero when one surrenders to Krishna. Here's a second quote. And if you don't mind, please pay close attention. It's very interesting. There is a simple solution to one's difficulties. That is turning to the Lord and saying, "My Lord, I cannot solve this alone. It is beyond my capabilities, intelligence, plans, ideas, and so on. I sincerely request you to accept me as your surrendered soul and protect me and maintain me." Protect me, and Maharaj is explaining, protect me means, generally we think protect me means protect my body, my pride, protect whatever things that we hold close to. Protect me means keep me in a situation where I can function and the problems of material existence don't upset my life that much. And maintain me means maintain me on the spiritual platform. If you do this simple step, a very interesting thing happens. The problem which looked so big, which looked like, now my life is finished, will start to shrink, 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 until it is the size of the hoofprint of a calf, which you can easily step over. That was what we heard, right? Yesterday and this morning. So Sharanagati has six angas or limbs. So the first is accepting all things favorable. Second is rejecting all things unfavorable. Third is seeing Krishna as one's only protector. Fourth, seeing Krishna as one's only maintainer. Fifth is abject humility or dainya. And sixth is offering one's body, mind and words to Krishna. Just by describing these six, I don't know if you are, I hope you are, we can only think of Prabhupada, no? It's so easy in one sense to look to him as that example. So as far as accepting things favorable for Krishna's service. Now generally, when we talk of accepting or rejecting, it is quite possible that we think in terms of things. Accepting certain things and rejecting certain things. But if we notice a little bit more scrutinizingly, those things that spiritualists would reject, devotees can accept. And those things that so-called spiritualists accept, devotees reject. So it's not about accepting or rejecting things. It is about accepting in a mood of service and rejecting the spirit of enjoyment or spirit of exploitation. The world around us moves with the spirit of enjoyment, what we call gratification. So people operate with accepting according to what is gratifying and rejecting that which doesn't seem gratifying. A devotee is not concerned by such. A devotee accepts things or circumstances, not necessarily which are gratifying, but which are necessary at the moment to serve Krishna. And they reject sometimes that which is very gratifying in the need of service. So if we can see it from that perspective, what we'll talk about Prabhupada will make sense. So first of all, Prabhupada accepted or sought out the shelter of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. As our founder Acharya, he has shown us by example that in order to become a devotee of Krishna, the very first step is to seek out a guru. Like even this afternoon, Dravida Prabhu was showing the nine processes of devotional service. But he said that these nine will only come to life when Rupa Goswami's very first instruction is that one should accept a spiritual master. When that happens, everything else has traction. Now, it doesn't mean that without that you cannot chant or anything. You should, but we all should. But the traction to our devotional vehicle comes from that very first step of accepting a spiritual master. So in terms of accepting that which is favorable, is to accept the relationship with Krishna, with the spiritual master. Now, why does one need to accept the spiritual master? It is not for, Prabhupada would often say, fashion. Prabhupada would say, this is not like, he has dog, I will get a dog. He has guru, I will get a guru. Like that. Guru is not a item that you keep in the house and say, oh, I also have. The idea of guru is, here is a person or any one of us who's being led through life by the mind and the modes of nature. And someone needs to show us the direction towards Krishna. And that's the function of a spiritual master. And accepting a guru really means that I will accept the direction of the guru. Otherwise the guru is only what we say figurehead or cosmetic. This accepting of direction of guru, remember we first said the purpose of surrendering is to carry out Krishna's will. So our first step is I have a will and Krishna's representative has a will. I make my will subordinate to that will. This act is the first germination of the seed of love. Because love is all about this. Love means whatever is my beloved's will, let that happen. So the first act of accepting a spiritual master's instruction is the foundation of love. So Srila Prabhupada, we have been reading Leelamrita every evening, and I promise you, it has been a fantastic experience. Just reading Prabhupada's life with the devotees. So, 1922, Prabhupada's very dear friend Narendra Malik pulls Prabhupada's arm. At that time he was Abhay Day. Come, let's see a sadhu. He's sitting there in Ulta Danga, a Bagh Bazar. Let's go see him. And Abhay Day says, I don't want to go. I have seen many of these kind of people. They all are looking for money. I don't want to go. No. This person is different. They're all the same. I don't want to go. No, you should come. And he pulled him by his arm. And just because Narendra Malik was good friends and they had grown up together, Abhay Day did not want to disappoint his friend. So they went. They went to the second floor, the balcony. And there, they saw Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur sitting in his chair with a few disciples. So these two young men, they made their full dandavats and offered their respects. And the Leelamrita describes that they had not even got up and sat down. They were still getting up. When Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, and note carefully, told both of them, you are young men, you know English, you should take the message of Lord Chaitanya and take it to the English speaking part of the world. Generally we think Prabhupada got that instruction. Actually both of them got that instruction. One took and one did not. Prabhupada continued in devotional life. We don't hear about Narendra Malik becoming a devotee. Who took who there, right? Narendra Malik took Prabhupada there. So this is about accepting, right? As soon as he said that, Prabhupada sat and he offered an objection. India is being subjugated by the British. Isn't it time, it's more important to free the country from subjugation of imperialistic rule? And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati challenged him. And he said, all that is very material and temporary. What's more important is the call of the soul. Freeing the soul is more important than freeing the country. Because you can be a completely bound by the modes of nature person in a free country, like we are all. It doesn't matter if you have a free country or not, we're still bound by the modes of nature. We are born, we die in this species and that species, and then this species and that species, all in a free country. So Bhakti Siddhanta said, it's not about a free country, it's about freeing the soul. And Prabhupada did not challenge that back. And when they came down that evening, Narendra Malik asked him, so what do you think? And he said, Chaitanya Deva's philosophy is in very good hands. And Prabhupada later reminisced that I was never defeated in argument. Never. This was the first time I was defeated, and I was very happy that I was defeated. This is accepting that which is favorable. Generally, we don't like to be defeated. But in being defeated by the guru like this, there is victory. So Prabhupada showed right at the very, very first meeting what it means to be a surrendered devotee. And from then on, the story unfolds in very fascinating ways. Another thing Prabhupada accepted that generally people would not accept is to cross the oceans and come to the Western world. In fact, according to Vedic understanding, one who crosses the oceans and goes to the Western world incurs sin. So Prabhupada, you could say, just for the sake of discussion here, accepted sin or sinful reaction for a higher cause. So notice, it's not about accepting or rejecting things. It is about accepting the service attitude and rejecting the enjoyment attitude. Prabhupada picked up modern technology. Prabhupada had something equivalent to a smartphone. It was called dictaphone. What we have is called a dictaphone. Prabhupada had dictaphone. He would dictate into this machine every night his transcendental voice called the Bhaktivedanta Purports. Now generally modern technology, most spiritualists will stay away from it. And I'm going to share with you different stories and pastimes of Prabhupada. So this is Prabhupada Katha. There was once a disciple came to Prabhupada and he said, Srila Prabhupada, there is a particular Mayavadi who has become very famous because he told openly to some journalists, I don't touch money. If someone gives me money, I don't touch it. My assistants touch it. I don't physically touch money. And Prabhupada said, oh, I am not like that. I want you to have a mound of cash in front of me. I want to embrace the cash and they can take a photo of me. Because Prabhupada's taking money or touching money was not about enjoyment, it was for Krishna's service. So there's no harm in touching money. Another thing Prabhupada accepted, another thing, but another feature of Prabhupada's acceptance is disciples. It looks fashionable to have disciples. You ask any spiritual master the joy of having disciples. It's not easy. It's not easy to take someone's independence or independent mindedness and mold it and bend it and make them surrender to Krishna. We think surrendering is difficult for us. how much more difficult is for the spiritual master to make us surrender. It's not easy. But Prabhupada accepted not one or two, but thousands. Why? Because that service to Krishna. It is in the best interest of the disciple, not in the interest of the guru. It's in the best interest of the disciple to accept. Because the jiva, the living entity, has been bhramite, wandering about. In Chicago, we call them bums. Right? Wandering about, aimlessly, eating from a garbage dumpster. Whether it's a restaurant, this way, that way, still like that, only from the view of the pure devotee, it is, that's the kind of lifestyle, just that we are perhaps well-dressed bums. But wandering, brahmanda brahmite, throughout the universe, like zombies. Someone has to take us and bring us to Krishna. So Prabhupada did. This is accepting. Because Krishna's will. Remember, the purpose of surrendering is Krishna's will needs to be fulfilled. This is Krishna's will. Please bring my parts and parcels back to me. Someone has to do what's called the dirty job, right? So the guru does. Another thing Prabhupada accepted is discomfort. Prabhupada was very comfortable in Vrindavan. It's the land of Krishna. Every dust particle reminds us of Krishna. The trees remind us of Krishna, or reminded him. I don't know if it reminded me of Krishna, but reminded him of Krishna. Every tree, every leaf, every bird's chirping, the temples, the streets, the people, reminded him of Krishna, Radha and Krishna. Prabhupada moved from there. We saw the video. You were ever well wisher. And Prabhupada had to publish back to Godhead magazine. So he would sit in what's called a tanga, a horse-driven carriage, and go from Vrindavan to Delhi twice or thrice a week. To make that trip by car once a year is not convenient. But Prabhupada would go to Mathura, then take a train, go to Delhi. And it's narrated that there are times when Prabhupada didn't eat anything. He was over 50 as a sannyasi. He hadn't eaten anything. He was in the heat of Delhi, trying to publish this and distribute, so he gets a few pennies, would be in dollar terms really high, paise. And there have been times when Prabhupada fainted out of, I guess, malnutrition, if you want to call it that. But why take on that discomfort? Not necessary. But there is the order of the guru. That is what is the call to action constantly. The call, the order of the guru. So Prabhupada accepted that discomfort. Because carrying out the order of the guru is not comfortable always. One has to take on certain discomfort to carry that out. So he took on that discomfort. That's just going to Delhi. What to speak of coming by Jaladuta? Right? We've heard this so many times. Prabhupada had two heart attacks on his trip, on a cargo ship. Made it. Anyone made it? How many of you are here from out of Chicago? Okay. Most likely before you got here, because you know Chicago, you had asked, where will I stay? Correct? You had made some arrangements. Each one of us makes arrangements. I'm going to travel to Houston in a couple of weeks. I already know where I'm going to stay. I made that arrangement. Prabhupada came to a whole different continent without any idea of where he's going to stay. He had one address in a very famous place called Butler, Pennsylvania. We live in America, we don't know where, most people don't know where Pennsylvania is. Forget about Butler, Pennsylvania. Prabhupada traveled. No address, no confirmation of where he's going to stay. He didn't get down in Pennsylvania, he got down in Boston. Prabhupada said, when I got off, I didn't know if I should look left, right, or left. I didn't know. It didn't matter to me. That's the discomfort to take. What a risk at that age to go. Because order of Guru. Krishna's will needs to be manifest. That's the purpose. Another thing Prabhupada accepted. Prabhupada saw that everything can be used in Krishna's service. So here's a nice story. There was once some of you may know this. There was once a Mayavadi who came to meet with Prabhupada. And they had some discussion and some dialogue. And naturally Prabhupada was strong against Mayavad. Anyway, the discussion ended and that Mayavadi left a bunch of brochures for Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, okay, keep them, and he left. So the disciples who were sitting around were a little confused. What is this? Prabhupada's keeping Mayavad literature on his desk. He in fact even told his disciples, keep this carefully. What is this? Prabhupada speaks so heavily against Mayavad. He's telling me to keep this carefully. So the next day, Prabhupada was sitting on his Vyasasan. They had evening kirtan. And the practice was that the devotees would bring a big plate of cut fruit. Prabhupada would take one piece of fruit and then he would distribute to everyone. Suddenly Prabhupada said, bring that Mayavadi brochure. Everyone was like, wow, what is that? So they brought the brochure. Prabhupada said, give one to everybody. No? One each. So the servant was very confused. Wow, not only did he now ask me to throw it away, now he wants me to distribute this to everyone. So everyone got the Mayavad brochure. I can't say this. And Prabhupada said, good, hold it and one by one come and use it as a plate for the fruit. And the dude is like, wow, Prabhupada's using that also in Krishna's service. This is how Prabhupada's brain worked. In terms of rejecting, so they go together. Prabhupada rejected. What is the first thing that Prabhupada rejected in Prabhupada's life? Any idea? Wife? No. I intentionally did not include that example here. The first thing Prabhupada rejected, Gandhi, his idea, his Gandhian ideology. Because he understood that that ideology would be a stumbling block on the path of bhakti. Because the spiritual master's instruction was conflicting with the previous ideology. So generally the tendency is to give up the guru's instruction. Because it's obstructing with my ideology. But Prabhupada taught us by example that one's own ideology must be given up to allow for the guru's instruction to flow through one's life. Because ultimately he wants to bring us to Krishna. Prabhupada always rejected another thing. False praise. Although it's very enjoyable. False praise or any praise is enjoyable. But Prabhupada rejected praise. Unnecessary praise. Whenever Prabhupada was told, Srila Prabhupada, you are such a pure devotee of Krishna. Prabhupada never necessarily accepted that. Once Prabhupada was speaking about Brahman being first class, Kshatriya being second class, Vaishyas or the tradesmen being third class, and the laborers being fourth class. And he said, then there are the dog eaters, they are fifth class. Someone asked Srila Prabhupada, what class are you? Because pure devotee is higher than Brahman, right? But Prabhupada said, Brahman is first class. Srila Prabhupada, what class are you? Prabhupada said, I am 10th class. I am the servant of all the devotees. Another thing Prabhupada rejected, if you will, rejected, was sense gratification. Although he was given the highest seat of honor, although he was given silver plate and cups to eat from, very fancy cars to drive on, but Prabhupada never accepted them in the spirit of sense gratification. Jai Shri Shri Kishore Kishori, Shri Shri Jagannath Baldev Subhadra Marni, Gaur Nitai Ki Jai. He rejected sense gratification. So here's a story of rejecting. This goes a little with humility as well. This is a pastime narrated by one of Prabhupada's disciples called Kaushalya Devi. So Kaushalya Devi was young, she was 16 years old when she joined Prabhupada's, army of devotees. And by the time she was 18, she was traveling with Mother Yamuna in India. And Prabhupada gave her many, many wonderful services. So in India, Prabhupada had come from Delhi, from Vrindavan, down to a place called Surat. And if you watch the videos of Prabhupada in Surat, you'll notice something. And Kaushalya Devi narrates it, that the entire city of Surat came out on the streets to meet Prabhupada. And it was a time where because Prabhupada's disciples were singing and dancing on the streets, the main arterial roads of the city were shut down. And they would allow for them to create stages just for the devotees to sing and dance and chant and, I guess, enlighten everyone. And the residents of Surat, what they would do is, the devotees would publish in the newspaper that tomorrow the Harinam party would come down such and such road. So the residents would bring their colorful saris and tie as canopies above the street so the devotees are protected from the heat. And as the devotees would come in the streets, each of them would, the residents would come and put garlands round the necks of the devotees till they could not see anything. And where was Prabhupada staying? In the house of one very, very, very rich man by the name Zariwala. And he had a palace, and Prabhupada was given like the whole, the largest section of the palace to live for the few days. Very comfortable. And right after Surat, they traveled east to Allahabad, which is the place where the three rivers meet. It's called the Triveni. And that's the place of what's called Kumbh Mela, the largest gathering of humanity on earth or something, once in 12 years. And when Prabhupada went to Kumbh Mela, he lived in a tent. So from palace to tent. From fancy reception to taking a bath in the cold water at 3 o'clock in the morning. And so when Prabhupada's disciples noticed that and they said something, Prabhupada said to them, yesterday we were in palace, today we are in a tent. What is important? It is either of these places, we are happy. It is not that now that the palace has gone away, my happiness is gone. Prabhupada was happy. This way or that way. When he was in the West, he would drive in a Cadillac. And when he went back to Mayapur, he lived in a mud hut. That hut is still there. He lived in a mud hut. And for Prabhupada, he was blissful in either of the conditions. Actually, if any one of us were to go to lie down in the lap of luxury, it may look like enjoyment, but actually it's suffering. Because we wouldn't know how to enjoy. That's the suffering. So that as far as rejection of... Oh, here's another excerpt from Leelamrita about Prabhupada rejecting. Now here Prabhupada rejects the Gaudiya Math. I'm not hinting anything, you're rejecting the movement or anything. But hear the context. Shortly after Srila Bhakti Siddhanta's passing away, litigation had begun. Ananta Vasudeva, supported by a majority of the members of the Gaudiya Math, had claimed that he, as the next Acharya, was the owner and director of the properties. But although Kunjavihari had only a few supporters, he defied the majority by pressing his claim through lawyers in court. So they're fighting, Ananta Vasudeva's camp and Kunjavihari Prabhu's camp. Kunjavihari and his men had possession of the Chaitanya Math and temples in Mayapur. Vasudeva's party captured other buildings. Quarreling and fist fights broke out. The preaching of the Gaudiya Math stopped. Abhay's inability to take part in the activities of the Gaudiya Math was suddenly in his favor. He had always been more a visitor than a member at a mutt, and at least externally, more the grihastha businessman than a missionary worker. This automatically put him at a distance from the fray. Of course, he was associated with the mutts in Bombay and Allahabad, but he had no managerial position, no claims to ownership, and no role in the litigation. Nor did he desire to take sides in the struggle for power. Like many of the other disciples, he was mortified to see that his spiritual master's instructions for cooperation had been disregarded and his mission thrown into a legal dispute. Abhay knew that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta had wanted the leaders to work cooperatively, and so he could not sympathize with the warring factions. Both parties were an insult to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. But he wanted to preach. Although becoming a very good English preacher was something he was meditating on more than actively doing, the Gaudiya Math would logically have been the vehicle for his preaching. He had already contributed articles to the Gaudiya Math's publication and had been working with his godbrothers at the Allahabad and Bombay centers. Naturally, he thought of serving his spiritual master in terms of serving within his spiritual master's mission. But the Gaudiya Math, which had always been known for pure, bold preaching of the message of Lord Chaitanya, was now becoming known for embroiled factions. As the Gaudiya Math broke down, he was also affected. Under the present circumstances, how could he carry out his spiritual master's order to preach? Previously, the main obstacle to his preaching had been family commitments, but now the obstacles were compounded. Now he had to wait helplessly for the outcome of this struggle. What would Krishna bring about? The very vehicle that he felt was needed for him to carry out a spiritual master's instruction, he had to give that up. Okay, now let's move on to protection. Seeing Krishna as one's only protector. So I have some... How many of you have this book called Prabhupada Nectar? Few. How many of you have read Prabhupada Nectar? Okay, very good. So those who don't have, I beg you, pick this up and read it. You will bathe in the consciousness of Prabhupada's amazing personality. Just story after story, point after point, stories that Prabhupada narrated, the different realizations of the devotees. They're just fantastic. And no wonder it's called Prabhupada Nectar. Yeah. So here's about protection. Okay. So this is a time when in America there was this heavy anti-cult crusade against the Hare Krishna movement. So it's in that context. The anti-cult crusade in America was only beginning its campaign during Srila Prabhupada's very last years. But Prabhupada gave good advice how the devotees could combat it and how they could realize they were protected by Krishna. Rameshwar Swami, was once explaining to Srila Prabhupada about these activities during a visit with Prabhupada in India. "We're actually getting much free exposure on the radio and television," said Rameshwar Swami. "And each time we come off sounding very intelligent, religious and nice, and the deprogrammers come off sounding like fanatics and bigots." So people are getting a good impression of us because of the publicity on radio and television. "Yes," said Srila Prabhupada. "Just like Sita was put into the fire and she came out unburned." Sita was blasphemed. They said, "This woman was kidnapped by Ravana and Ramachandra is so henpecked that he has again picked her up and is living with her." So Ramachandra put her in the fire and she came out unharmed. So what is this reference to do about protection of Krishna? Those of you who know Ramayana, after the killing of Ravana, when Sita Devi had to be brought back from Lanka to Ayodhya, Lord Ramachandra lit a fire, a big fire, and asked Sita Devi, "Please walk through the fire. This is a test to see if your chastity has been defiled even a little bit. If you even for a moment had any feelings for Ravana, you will burn in that fire. This is a test." And everyone objected. "No, no, 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 what are you doing? We all know Sita Devi is very chaste." And Lord Ramachandra said, "I also know she is very chaste. But in the future, someone may doubt her character because someone may say, we don't know. So this is for once and for all, that no one will ever speak of Sita Devi's character." And when she walked through the fire, she was completely unharmed. So the point is, being in the fire at that moment seems like a major challenge and difficulty for the devotee. But Krishna knows, and he is protecting. Or in this case, Lord Ramachandra was protecting. So Prabhupada is teaching that deprogrammers or whoever was the anti-cult movement was challenging Prabhupada's movement and the devotees. And likewise, in our lives, many challenges have come, are coming, and what would you like? Will not come or will continue coming? What do you think? Will come. Anyone? Will not come? Will come. Guaranteed, they will come. And you know what? The more we chant Hare Krishna, bigger difficulties will come. Yeah. Yes, right. That's true, no? That's true in life. We are laughing, but that is true. When we were in second grade, our math was 4 plus 3 equals, and we struggled with that. 4, 5, 6, 7. You come to 10th grade, no one asks 4 plus 3. We get some, whatever, preliminary calculus problems. The more you grow, the bigger the problem. You come to engineering, for those of us who wasted 4 years, we had worse problems to solve in math. I mean, a point on a wheel or somewhere that moves, what is the trajectory? Who cares? But we solved those problems. Right? We solved. Laugh. Who cares? But we did. It's not useful for us in life anymore, but we did. So and someone's PhD also here. So more difficult. So like that, as we grow in our Krishna consciousness, more challenges. But we have something that we did not have previously. The attraction and relationship with the spiritual master and chanting Hare Krishna. Then any obstacle can be faced. You know why? Anyway, I won't discourage you. In the Bhagavatam, there is a story of Prahlad Maharaj. Why? Someday we'll also face it. That is why. It's preparing us for challenges in life. So more difficulties will come. But this is what is going to carry us through. The Krishna will protect me. Avashya rakshiti iti vishvasa palana. This is a little side point. The very first words Arjuna speaks in the Bhagavad Gita, if you know what he says, senayor ubhayor madhye ratham sthapayame achyuta. Krishna is introduced to the entire world as achyuta. The word achyuta means one who never fails. This is the greatest introduction to give to the world. Here is a person who never will fail his devotee. Because that is who Krishna is. He was not introduced as Krishna, all attractive, achyuta. That one who takes Krishna's side, Krishna will never leave him. In fact, even when we leave him, he doesn't leave us. Yeah, there's sometimes a trouble. Why are you not leaving me? But he never leaves. This is achyuta. His commitment is so infallible, but he's always there to protect. This is what Prabhupada's giving us as a gift by showing in his own life. The Krishna is always protecting. Heart attacks, Krishna is protecting. Big challenges, Krishna is protecting. And Prabhupada never budged from that position that, oh, I hope Krishna doesn't forget me. But Krishna will protect me. And it comes out in all of Prabhupada's purports, yeah, that faith that he is giving, what he has, he is giving us. Okay, next. I got to move fast. Next. Krishna is one's only maintainer. What does maintainer mean? So here are some ideas of what being maintained by means. First, everything we need comes from Krishna. This is what maintainer means. We see it that way. We understand that everything we need comes from Krishna. We get it in the right amount. We get it at the right time. And we get what is good for us. That is how he maintains us. Another way, he maintains us. How? He keeps us engaged in his service. This is maintenance. A master who does not keep his servant engaged in service, what kind of a master is he? So Krishna knows not how to keep us busy for the next 1 week, 6 months, 10 years, 3 lifetimes. Krishna can keep us busy eternally. He has so much service to give that he can maintain us eternally. There is nobody in this entire creation who can maintain someone eternally. They can maintain someone for some period of time. But when Krishna, we say, is their maintainer, he can maintain us eternally. Another way we see from our side, when we say Krishna is my maintainer, is we learn, or we should learn, how not to waste anything that Krishna gives. Because we understand that he's maintained. So we don't waste money. We don't waste time. We don't waste our energy. We don't waste the facilities he's given. We don't waste anything that he's given. Is there anything Krishna is not giving us? Now this principle is important because we go to work, many of us, and sometimes we fall into the trap of thinking that I am being maintained by my company, or I am being maintained by my hard work, which is not true. The company is standing on earth and Krishna is maintaining that earth. If I decide to have a job on a different planet, that planet also Krishna is maintaining. There's nothing that Krishna, I'm saying it trying to be humorous, but Krishna is the maintainer for all living entities. At the end, Prabhupada would challenge, even if you got money, let's say, like in the communist time, they had challenged people this way. Even if we say the money came from somewhere else, what are we going to do with the money? We have to eat. And food company is not giving, Krishna is giving. So we are maintained not by money, we are maintained by food. So Krishna is the real maintainer. Next is humility. So here are some examples of Prabhupada's humility. The Markine Bhagavad Dharma song. Prabhupada says, and that's been the focus, that song, especially the 50th year of ISKCON. Prabhupada said, I don't know why I'm not, my name is Bhaktivedanta, but I don't have bhakti, nor do I know the conclusions of Veda. And please make my speaking suitable to their understanding. And he says, make me dance. Of course, I'm paraphrasing the song. There are times when Prabhupada, in his position as the spiritual master, a pure devotee of Krishna, in the beginning, no one knew how to interact with Srila Prabhupada. So when they were in 26 Second Avenue, they had only one bathroom and four or five devotees staying together with Srila Prabhupada. And every morning, Prabhupada would stand in line to use the bathroom. There is an instance where Prabhupada standing in line, there was a devotee standing behind Prabhupada, and when Prabhupada's turn came, this devotee cut the line and told him, sorry Swamiji, I need to use this urgently, and cut through. And Prabhupada did not say, I am the spiritual master, sakshat dharitve na samasta shastraya, I have to stand in line to go to the bathroom, what is this? Prabhupada just stood and accepted it. Prabhupada would have a program. He would cook for 30, 40 people alone. Anyone can imagine what it is to be like a 70-year-old person and cook alone for 40 people, and that too, big, young American men and, I don't know, women, but men definitely, to cook for them. And they would come for the program, chant with Prabhupada, thank you Swamiji, very nice dinner, walk away. And he would clean up everything all by himself. Why? This Krishna's will. He's doing this to manifest that will. And when they would say, Swamiji or Srila Prabhupada, you're so amazing, his always response was, all of you have been sent to me by my spiritual master. He saw his disciples as those sent by his spiritual master. So he literally served his disciples. Literally served them. In Amsterdam, Prabhupada was doing a fire yajna. And he had asked, and those devotees were very young, they didn't know what fire yajna was, they had never seen a fire sacrifice. So, and we know, around the fire pit, we place fruit. So Prabhupada looked at one of the devotees and said, bring fruit. So he went down, and he only knew that the way you eat fruit is you cut it. So he cut the apples into nice wedges, and brought it on a plate, and Prabhupada said, what is this? Srila Prabhupada, this is fruit. Prabhupada says, this is not right. Because they didn't bring the right sticks, they didn't put things properly. Now he has fruit, and came as nicely wedged fruit. And Prabhupada became very upset with that devotee. So you don't know anything. In the crowd was a fairly newcomer who didn't nearly know who Prabhupada was. And he was coming for a few weeks, and he had heard the devotees always tell or say to each other, why are you agitated? Chant Hare Krishna. So this brand new person from the crowd said to Prabhupada, why are you agitated? Chant Hare Krishna. If our wife or husband tells us, why are you agitated, chant Hare Krishna. We know the reaction, right? And this is out in the public. And you know what is Prabhupada's response? He sat back, put his hand in his bead bag and said, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Why? Because proper advice. Prabhupada didn't say, I'm Jagat Guru, I know what to do. He just quietly chanted. Because it was truth spoken, and humility means accepting truth. This is humility, definition. That where there is truth, I accept it. And that's what Prabhupada did. Not that a young person said something to me. Okay, final. There was a time when the devotees were in the airport. Nowadays you cannot receive your spiritual master at the airport the way they used to receive Srila Prabhupada. No kirtan, nothing. You can't even offer obeisances actually. But anyway, when Prabhupada would come, the devotees would take over the entire airport. Mridangas, karta, loud chanting. So there was an occasion where Prabhupada was leaving from that particular airport to go somewhere. And Prabhupada was sitting in one of the chairs. All the devotees had crowded that waiting area. So much so that other passengers could not even get a place to sit. So the airport officials murmured something to one of the devotees. And said, okay, we'll make some space. So he announced, all of the devotees of ISKCON, can you please sit on this side? So all the devotees moved. Prabhupada got up and moved and sat that side. I said, no, Srila Prabhupada, I didn't mean you. Prabhupada said, I'm a devotee of ISKCON. I will also sit on this side. In Japan, they were traveling by train. And it was crowded. It was fairly crowded. And the devotees were standing. Prabhupada was sitting. And there was a seat across from Prabhupada. And Prabhupada had his feet on that seat while sitting on this side, you know, relaxing. So, I think someone in the train had suggested to everyone, please sit down. And so they were trying to find a place. Now this devotee naturally cannot sit because Prabhupada's feet are there. You won't tell Prabhupada. So the other devotee said to Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, could you kindly move your lotus feet? And Prabhupada quipped, I will remove my lotus feet so he can put his lotus backside on the seat. Very humorous, but very humble and gentle. I don't have time to say about using mind, body and words in the service of Krishna. Now there is no argument about how Prabhupada used his body in Krishna's service. Among the things that he did from morning till night, we know Prabhupada's day and how he lived. But you know how the morning walks came about? You know the story? Oh, can you please narrate to us the story of how the morning walks came about? Perfect timing, Dravida Prabhu. Okay, good. And it's time for me to shut up, so. There's the mics right there.
Kind of, there you go. So, some of you may or may not know, Srila Prabhupada had, forgive me, I've just been running up and down the stairs, no elevator. Prabhupada had a stroke in 1967 at the end of May, and it was very serious, and it was Memorial Day, and on Memorial Day it's very hard to get a doctor in New York. Everyone was out of town, so they finally found this old Jewish doctor who was in town, you know. So they invited him over. He didn't know, and he comes into the room, into the storefront, 22nd Avenue. And there's all of these young men, you know, chanting Hare Krishna. He said, what's all this about? You know, he was very, didn't know what kind of scene this was. It was hippie days. He didn't know what it was, you know. So then he goes and he sees Prabhupada. And he examined him cursorily. And he said, the old man prays too much. That was the first thing. The old man prays too much. And so Brahmananda, he was in charge, you know. And so after a few minutes, he kind of started shooing him out. But before he left, he looked back and he said, you should get out of this room. You should do some walking, do some exercise. And so then he left. And so the boys were kind of, you know, he didn't think he did anything. But Prabhupada said, yes, that's a very good idea. I should get more exercise. Because till then he was just sitting and writing, sitting, and then going down doing the programs. So from that point on, he started taking his morning walks. He took that. And later on he said, these morning walks and my massages is what's keeping me going. He went 11 years. It was touch and go. And after that, he went to the hospital before? I forget. I think he went into the hospital, and there's a whole adventure on that.
After that.
Yeah, and then he went for recuperation on the first in New Jersey, then in near San Francisco, and it didn't work, and he went back to India. And many of the devotees thought they wouldn't see him again. There were just two centers, New York and San Francisco. That was it. And if Prabhupada hadn't come back, that would have been it. But he came back 4 months later in December, and then he started everything, and everything we know happened after that.
Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.